Are you ready?
Hi there, this is the Pits and Goods podcast where we live the years of Geekmas past. I'm Jamie, an avid geekgoer, amateur musician, and as far as I'm aware, still a nice guy. And I'm joined today by Roland. How's it going, Roland?
Yeah, it's going good. Thanks for having me.
It's okay. Are you doing well in these tough times at the moment?
What I usually say is I'm doing as well as 2020 will let me be doing.
We're almost at the end of it. We're almost at the end of 2020.
Yeah, well, so far November's been looking up.
Yeah. And I think we've got a lot to look forward to in the next year. If you are listening to this going backwards and you are in 2021, look at you.
Send us a message from the future, please.
Yeah, let us know.
Let us know everything's okay. Please don't include any 2020 hindsight jokes because we get it. I mean...
Well, maybe the hindsight is that 2020 wasn't the worst of it, and 2021 might be worse. We'll go down that path.
Well, I mean, I'm a sci-fi, fantasy, whatever geek, so I'll keep it optimistic. Like, the reason we haven't had time travelers before 2020 was Corona. So, I mean, obviously they couldn't take the disease back in time. So maybe now we'll get some time travel. We don't know.
We digress.
We digress much. All right, Jamie.
Today we're going to be talking about your time seeing Linkin Park at the Pink Point Festival in May 2007.
Yes.
Just for a background of Linkin Park, they're an American rock band formed in 1996 in the Algora Hills of California, in which their early music spanned a fusion of heavy metal and hip-hop, and then they later transitioned into more electronica and pop-influenced music. Roland, how did you become a fan of Linkin Park?
Well, I actually got to know of Linkin Park by a classmate of mine, Eric. He was a skater dude, and he had, like, back in those days, we had, like, portable CD players that you took everywhere if you wanted to listen to music. And he had the original Hybrid Theory album, and he had a copy burned, and he lent it to me. And I then promptly took it home, made a copy of it, and, you know, spent the next... 20 years listening to it, I guess.
Yeah, Hybrid Theory. We'll run through the albums in a bit, but I'm the same. I had a burnt copy of it, the same as you. And yeah. Growing up, I just had it on repeat all the time, Hybrid Theory. It was a game changer of an album.
Hybrid Theory is a powerhouse of an album. Like, in all honesty, it's fantastic.
It is, and there's not many albums you can pick up through history, and from start to finish, you can't not listen to a song.
Yeah, like there's no skipping any song on Hybrid Theory. Like if you start at Papercut, you're gonna go all the way.
Definitely, and I believe it's just turned 20 this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had a big anniversary box edition.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Did you manage to get your hands on one?
No. No, it was hundreds of bucks, man. I have a Spotify account. I didn't get one.
Oh, that would have been a nice kind of memento, but sure.
Maybe I'll pick some up in the coming years. But it's like it has a lot of vinyl and stuff, and I don't actually have a record player, so I didn't see the plus side on getting it if everything on it was also going to be available on Spotify.
And call me kind of on music snobbery. I still don't see the point in vinyl.
I honestly don't see the point in vinyl either. I, like, we were just talking about the little portable CD players. Like, when we switched to MP3 players, I was like, cool, now I can actually have my entire music library with me. Why would I ever want to switch back to having a gigantic ass one LP with 12 songs on it, and you know, that's it. Now I don't mind digital music. I like having access to everything. I'm pretty modern like that.
I can already feel the glares of any music snobs now listening to this going,
oh, we're gonna get so much flame for this. Yes.
that's all the 5-star reviews gone down to 1-star, but final is the way forward.
This was an okay podcast for about 5 minutes, and then they just went final and everything went hell.
Did we make it to 5 minutes? I think we made it to 30 seconds and we lost half the listeners.
Well, fair, but I didn't mean to burn on vinyl, but you know, I just never picked it up myself. I never got into it, and if someone were to, you know, introduce me to it, it probably has some upsides, but it just, it's one of those, sometimes you have things that you don't get into. Like there's fads and you turn around like, wait, since when is this a fad? Vinyl is one of those things for me. Like I blinked and suddenly everyone was talking about vinyl. I was like, wait, what did I miss?
I think it, like you say, it is one of those. Some people, like, everyone has their little thing that they collect. Some people collect comic books, some people mm-hmm. collect vinyls, some people, you know, it's, even though I love music, I wouldn't ever go out my way, because like vinyl players are hundreds of pounds, and then vinyls themselves are ridiculously expensive now. So, yes, I don't see the point.
I think my music taste is too eclectic to actually, you know, enjoy having a vinyl. Because there's, like, we were talking about Hyper Theory being one of those albums that you have to listen to from start to end. Like, the fact is that that's an exception. Like, there's so many albums where I listen to one song and I'm like, ooh, now I want to listen to this song. But that's not on this album. And if you have a vinyl player, that's a lot of hassle.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I do agree. There's very few. I think it's the concept of music nowadays. There's very few albums now that you listen to and you can listen to start to finish, because most mm-hmm. bands now focus on releasing the commercially successful single, and then it's another 8 tracks of fillers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like you get like 4 teaser songs before the album's even out, and you're just like, well, that, why did you already release all the good songs? Why did you know, why not just release the album and let me ingest all of this glorious music?
Yeah, well, and that's just not the way the music is anymore. We don't get masterpieces of albums anymore. It's just try and make a book as quick as you can, which is fair enough. You know, that's their career at the end of the day. So,
fair. It's also, you know, everything's going faster nowadays. Like, news is interesting for about 1 hour and then it's old news, and you know, music is interesting for about 1 hour and then it's old music. And so I kind of get it. You have to, what they try to do, of course, is they try to make a single stand out or make an impact. And if it doesn't work, then they try with the second song, and then they try with the third song, and then they try with the fourth song. And if by that point it hasn't worked, you might as well just release the album and start working on your next one, I guess.
Yeah, just cancel all the tours because no one's going to be coming.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's 2020. No one's going on tour anymore.
Stop. You know, the worrying thing at the moment is I'm just looking at 2021 going, I've got such a hectic year, but oh, it's not going to happen. Got many booked for 2021?
Well, like, I had like 6 concerts booked for 2020, and like 1 or 2 of them got canceled and the rest just got moved further and further and further. I'm just like, you know, I'm keeping track on, I think I have 2 or 3 in May as well, and Shikai being one of them. I was really looking forward to La Dispute, but that unfortunately got canceled. I'm going to the new Evanescence store with Within Temptation.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I had a few on the planning. Jamie Cullum.
That's a real diversion away from Evanescence. And
oh, but I have a really diverse, like, if I go into my Spotify and like click most play, you'll go from like dark heavy metal to K-pop to jazz to, like, it's all over the place. That's also one of the things that really drew me into Linkin Park in the first place. Like, I heard, like, One Step Closer, I heard that on you know, the MTV and whatever. But when I first listened to Papercut, like, if there's anything I really love in music, it's layers. And the way Papercut builds, and at the end, all the f***ing layers, like, start building on top of each other, and, like, oh, man. That song, like, really cemented it for me. Like, this is good.
Yeah, and it was a new kind of... It's a very new kind of style of music. You know, there was very few bands doing that kind of electronic rock style at the time. You know, if I remember right, there was, like, them, you know, maybe Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
Maybe Korn was doing it a little bit.
But tiny
very
bit.
Niche... kind of area of music.
Yeah, it was like at the start, it was the new metal, of course. It wasn't, new metal wasn't gigantic, but there were some big names in there.
So yeah, 7 studio albums were released by Linkin Park.
Yeah.
The first being, obviously what we've mentioned, Hybrid Theory, released in 2000.
Yeah.
Which featured the singles One Step Closer, In the End, Crawling, and Papercut. And then they released Meteora, which was 2003.
Gigantic.
Somewhere I Belong, Faint, Numb, not featuring Jay-Z, From the Inside, and Breaking the Habit.
Yeah.
Then they released, there's a big break there for the next album, where they released Minutes to Midnight in 2007, which features the singles What I've Done, Bleed It Out, Shadow of the Day, Giving Up, and Leave Out All the Rest.
A lot of touring after Meteora. Like, I think they did like 3 solid years of touring, and like in between that, or 2.5 years of touring or something. And then they were like done with touring for 2 months. They took 2 months off and then they started in the studio with Rick Rubin for Minutes to Midnight.
In 2010, they released the album 1,000 Suns, featuring singles The Catalyst, Waiting for the End, Burning the Skies, and Iridescent. Then there was a 2-year gap for Living Things, which featured the singles Burn It Down, Lost in the Echo, Powerless, and Castle of Glass. Then I think you mentioned there was a remix album of Living Things.
Yeah, Recharged, yeah.
Which is Recharged, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 2014, they released the album The Hunting Party, featuring the singles Guilty All the Same, Until It's Gone, Wastelands, Rebellion, and Final Masquerade. And then the final album was 2017, which was One More Light, featuring Heavy, Talking to Myself, and One More Light. So if you were to pick an album on there, I kind of have an inkling what it might be, but what would you say is a favorite album on there?
Right, so I actually get this question and this discussion a lot, but I think my favorite album is 1,000 Suns.
Interesting.
And my favorite song of theirs is on Hybrid Theory, because that's A Place for My Head.
Plays From Ahead is a fantastic song.
Yeah.
I'd agree.
Like, after Meteora came out, like, that same year they did the Life in Texas DVD. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but they do a live version of A Place For My Head on that. Like, if you're listening to this podcast, like, pause this podcast, go on YouTube, watch the live performance of A Place For My Head. It's fantastic. No, but that was actually, like, listening to the live version of Place From Ad was so fantastic, because, like, it's a great song to start with, but, like, the way Chester uses his voice to, like, put little accents on specific words, and, like, he winds up the start of the performance with this, like, really high back of his throat, like, scream. It's fabulous.
Mm-hmm. So you saw them at Pinkpop Festival in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Do you want to, because I'm from the UK originally, so I would kind of know more about the likes of Glastonbury, Leeds, Reading. I know a little bit about Pinkpop from watching YouTube videos of bands that I like there, but I don't know the whole background of it. Do you want to kind of give us a little bit of background on Pinkpop as a festival?
Yeah, so Pinkpop started in the 1970s, I believe. So it's like 50 years old. And It's on in Holland. You have the Pentecostal weekend is actually a holiday. So you have the Pentecost is on Sunday, of course, and then you also have the Monday off. That's a Dutch thing. So what Pinkpop actually did is they jumped into that like gap in the middle of, you know, start end of May, start of June, you know, whenever it fell in the calendar year. And they organized a festival there because everyone was going to be free for 3 days anyway. And that's what it comes from. And of course, because the Dutch name for Pentecost is Pinksteren, which starts with the letters P, I, and K, so pink. You know, all the branding and everything around the festival is pink. So like the entire crowd will be people walking around with pink hats, and you know, the stages themselves are lined with pink decorations, and you know, that's kind of the vibe of the festival. So a lot of pink everywhere.
So do you attend that every year? Do you or
no? So far I've been, I want to say 4 times. Yeah, I think 4 times. It's not something I go to every year, but in 2007, when Linkin Park was coming, I was like, I have to go. It was actually pretty big deal because it was in the middle of my exams, my high school exams. Yeah. So what happened was that they announced in like February or something that they were coming. And I checked the calendar for my school, and I was like, all right, that's in the middle of my 2 weeks of exams. I have an exam the next morning at 9 o'clock. It was English, and you know, I don't know if you've noticed, but my English isn't necessarily bad. So the conversation with my mom went a little something like that. I'm like, Mom, Linkin Park are coming to Holland. They're coming to Pinkpop. She's like, oh, when are they coming? Well, Pinkpop's in the end of May. She's like, isn't that in the middle of your exams? Yeah, it is. Okay. When is it? Well, it's on Monday, and I have my English exam the day after. So the next words out of my mom's mouth were, okay, so cool. Do you need me to get tickets?
Oh, Jesus. Wow, that's
yeah, she knew how much of a fan I was. So, I mean, it was obvious that I was going. I obviously couldn't go the whole weekend because I did have to do some studying. But I had to go for Linkin Park. I had to.
I think the world needs more mothers like that.
My mom's fantastic.
That's brilliant. And how did your English exam go?
Well, of course, I was very, very, very hungover and very, very tired. I think I got like a 7.8 or something.
7.8.
Yeah, so
check how that grades on our systems.
Well, in Dutch skills are like the lowest is a 0 and the highest is a 10. So
you still did pretty well then.
Yeah, I did okay.
That'd be probably what, a C or a B in English systems probably.
Around a B somewhere.
Yeah. She's said still better than I did in any of my exams, and I didn't have any gigs around my exams. That's what I missed.
Yeah, but I had to go. Like I couldn't miss it. Like this was 2007. I at this point I'd been a fan for like 5 years. So
on that Monday,
yeah,
that you went, a few artists that I picked out that kind of stood out to me were the Arctic Monkeys, Evanescence, Korn, and 30 Seconds to Mars. Was there any kind of sets other than this one before we get into this one that kind of stood out to you during the day? Or
well, like I came in, like my dad drove me and a few friends like over, and we came into the festival with the while the Fratellis were playing, and to just like bounce into a festival while you're hearing like a gigantic crowd going it just set the mood, man. It just really set the mood. And then after that we went and watched Stone Sour, which was fantastic. Yeah, really good. It was pretty hilarious because they'd just become like famous with Through the Glass.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of girls there who didn't understand what they were going to be watching in it. That was really, really funny. You know, when they're like, oh, I hope he does the romantic song. He just goes up like, get inside, get inside. You know, that sort of stuff is f-ing hilarious. But yeah, I for one, and I was with a few friends of mine who were there primarily for Linkin Park. So we queued up. There was the track at Pink Pop is basically a gigantic racetrack.
Okay.
And there's like one end of the racetrack. There's the like main stage, and then like three quarters of the way there's another stage with like the last quarter of the racetrack for the second stage. So Stone Sour was on the second stage, and after Stone Sour we made our way to the first stage to like get in line to get into the forward section in front of the main stage.
Yeah,
because there was like a barricaded forward section that we wanted to be in for Linkin Park.
Okay.
And we actually got lucky and we got in on the band before that, and that was Arctic Monkeys. So I was in the front stage for the Arctic Monkeys show, which was really, really good as well. You know, you can't stand still when the guys are playing guitar. It's impossible.
We kind of briefly touched on it before, but this show was part of the Minutes to Midnight World Tour. Yep. That they performed, where 30 Seconds to Mars supported them during the normal shows, but I think they played a lower slot during the festival.
Yeah.
So in terms of getting to know this album before you got to see them, how did that go? Were you excited for the album? Did you know much about it?
I was hyped. They released What I've Done as a single at the start of April. And, like, it'd been the first time that they released, like, a new album since I'd basically become a fan. Because I became a fan, like, at the, like, around the time that Meteor came out. So I didn't necessarily view that as a new album. It just, like, I became a fan around, you know, January, April, March of 2003. So I was just assimilating the music, and it was all part of one giant discography for me. And then Minutes to Midnight was the first like album that I experienced as an album, you know, really dropped as an album that I was really looking forward to. So they dropped What I've Done as a single, as they did back then when you know, there were still like singles, and you know, they drop a single and then you wait for the album. And then the album came out, and it was like two or three weeks before the show. And then I listened to it like nonstop.
So you kind of knew the songs before?
Yeah, no. I knew the songs when they and they played quite a few songs as well from the album, like Little Things and like Leave Out All the Rest and Given Up with the 23-second scream. So I knew the songs from the new album, but it was pretty fresh tour because the album had just dropped. So it was one of the first, it wasn't the first, but one of the first shows that they played on that tour.
But that's a fair effort for you to know the album before you saw. Fair effort. That's dedication to the cause.
Yeah, but like I remember looking forward to it so much and like listening to it nonstop until the. I mean, I listened to some Hybrid Theory and some Meteor as well, but I was really, really hyped for the concert, and I had a lot of studying to do, so I had a lot of music on during the study.
I was going to say, this is all whilst you were studying, obviously. Just obviously. Straight A grades, you know.
Well, straight B's, you know.
Straight B's. since you was already going to flump one test, you know, you might as well get all the other ones out of the way. So I've got the set list in front of me, courtesy of Setlist FM.
Well, the first thing is that, like, they opened the set list, which is a gigantic way to open any set list ever. They opened with One Step Closer. What they do is they riff at the in the middle of One Step Closer.
Oh yeah,
and,
yeah,
yeah. And they sort of like they build with the drums and they build with that riff and they build like an opener to the song, and then you know the actual song drops in and that's when the show kicks off. So that it was like they walked out onto the stage with the like it started with Phoenix, I think Phoenix, the bass player. He walked on, he started playing the bass, and then like Rob came up and started drumming behind him, and like then and Rob came on playing guitar, and then Joe and Jester and Mike came on, and like they all grouped up and they started playing One Step Closer, which is a hell of a way to kick off a concert, I'll tell you that much.
Definitely, One Step Closer is an absolutely scorching track to start on there.
Yeah, like, because it was, like, arguably, like, after In the End, of course, their biggest hit from Hybrid Theory. So to start off your set list with One Step Closer, it's like, all right, where are we going from here?
Yeah, so then you followed up with Lying From You.
Fantastic. Fan favorite back then.
Was it?
Yeah, because when Meteora dropped, there was actually some, like, Somewhere I Belong was like the first single of that, but there was some, like, people who wanted Lying From You to be a single. So when they, what they did is it wasn't actually a single, but when they dropped the Live in Texas DVD, they dropped the Lying From You from the DVD as a single.
So
they could give the fans what they wanted while, you know, still promoting the new material.
So, yeah, then they followed up with Somewhere I Belong.
Yeah.
Followed up by No More Sorrow.
Which was a new song, yeah.
Exactly.
That was on Minutes to Midnight.
Also, they left it a good 4 songs before they dropped in any of the new stuff.
Yeah.
And did they introduce it as a new song, or did they just power for the chorus?
Yeah, they did actually. They like Mike did a little thing where he was like, "Yo, we just released a new album. I don't know if any of you know, but if it's all right with you, we're gonna play a new song for you." And then, you know, of course, the entire crowd's cheering because they're like, "Yay, new stuff!"
They went into the absolute blistering hit, "Paper Cut."
Yeah, which they always dedicate to the LPU fan base.
Oh, did he?
The Linkin Park Underground, yeah.
So then they followed up with a song which I really like, Points of Authority.
Yeah, the guitar on that is really good.
Great song. Followed up by Given Up.
Give It Up with the gigantic... Like, I remember the first time I listened to that song and, like, Chester started screaming at the 2/3 of the way through the song, and he just kept screaming, man. And like, I remember getting a stop and just going like, how long is this?
So we'd gone through Giving Up, and then we went into From the Inside,
mm-hmm.
Then into Leave Out All the Rest,
which is one of your personal favorites.
I absolutely love that song. Yeah. Then they went into Numb, which,
yeah,
I'm assuming was the pre-Jay-Z Numb.
Yeah, it was the original version.
Okay, then. So we went from Numb into... Now, there's a note on the set list here, and you might be able to clarify this now.
Yeah.
There's a note on the set list here that they did Pushing Me Away, which is an amazing song, but they did a piano version of it.
They do, yeah. What Chester and Michael do is, like, it's usually a midpoint in the set. They started doing that around the time of Meteora touring. What they did was they did, like, they gave the rest of the band a break, and it'd be just Mike on the piano and Chester on the mic, and they do a piano version of Pushing Me Away. It's on the, if you want to check it out, it's on the Life in Texas DVD that we were talking about earlier as well.
Okay, yeah.
It's a really stripped down version of the song, and it's slower than the original Hybrid Theory version, but it's because of the way Chester gets to, you know, stretches vocal cords, the Pushing Me Away, especially that part of the song, he can really stretch it and, you know, make it almost go out over the field at a concert.
Yeah.
And it's a really good version of the song.
And what they usually do after that is which they did here as well, is they do Breaking the Habit, and they what they do is they do the first verse for Breaking the Habit just with piano, and then like when then the electronics hit in, and then the do 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 do, and then the rest of the band comes back.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. And knowing kind of the version of, just to go jump out to pushing me away, knowing the version on Hybrid Theory, I imagine that, like, it's not acoustic, but stripped back. It just, I imagine it's beautiful, like, because the song itself is, the lyrics themselves are, you know, an amazing lyrics, like, but imagine it's a really...
I've Lied to You the same way that I always do. Yeah, it's fantastic lyrics, but like with the because in the Hybrid Theory version, you have like the electronic like Han like dun 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 dun, and that's basically the guiding path for Mike's piano in the stripped down version.
Okay.
So it's. He transforms it into some chords, and it's really good. You should listen to it after this.
So you said we went into Breaking the Habit, and then went into two more Hybrid Theory bangers, which is In the End.
In the End, which of course gets the entire field going. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm surprised that isn't closer to the end. Like, I'm surprised that isn't like one of the last songs they play being their biggest hit, you know.
Yeah, but like that, I think the arguably at that point the other big hit they had is One Step Closer, and they opened with it. Like,
oh yeah, it's closer.
And I actually listened to an interview with Mike where he said at some point they sometimes did like the big songs at the start of the set list at festivals, so that, you know, the people who were just there to hear those songs could fuck off and the real fans could enjoy them. Could enjoy the concert because it was cool to hate on them because it wasn't totally metal, and it wasn't, you know, it was sort of in the middle. And like he talks about playing like Rock and Ring and stuff, like there's like totally metal dudes like they're waiting for Slayer and whatever, and you're gonna come up and rap for them. Like sometimes you just have to give the people what they want. And you have to get them on your side a little bit. So I think that was the logic behind opening with One Step Closer. And, you know, if you're going to wait until the end of the show to give them In the End, then they're going to be there at the end, at the start for One Step Closer. And then, you know, they're going to get a drink, and then they're going to come back at the end of the show so they can go to the next show after that. You know?
Yeah.
It's a festival set lists are a specific breed, I think.
Yeah. That makes sense, actually. Yeah. It's a fair point. Linkin Park have some logic behind it.
You could actually say they've done some fair bit of touring and, you know, live music playing, so they have some experience as well.
You may say that. You may say that.
All right. In the End, and then Crawling, of course, which is a gigantic combo.
Yes, definitely a huge combo. Like, I think that's what we were saying before about Hybrid Theory, though, and about, you know, a lot of the, even songs like Live Out the Rest, Numb, you know, there's so many songs that you could put at the start, at the end of a set list, because they're all huge songs, like.
Yeah.
And the following up from Crawling is another massive song in What I've Done, you know, that was a massive song.
What I've Done was really big, and this was even before, I think, I don't know when, I don't specifically remember when Transformers came out, but What I've Done was featured in the first Transformers film, and that was actually a huge boost to their popularity.
Did they not write another song for Transformers?
Yeah, for the second one they wrote New Divide.
That was it. Yeah. That was it.
To this day, it's still my dad's ringtone when I call him.
Is that because of your association, or is it just it
looks? No, like, he really likes that song. He likes the intro to it, so he set it as my ringtone, like, you know, in 2009 or whenever it was. Jesus. It's just never been changed. Like he whenever I call him, that's the song that plays.
They followed up with from What I've Done with The Little Things Give You Away.
Yeah, fantastic song, because it starts really small and it builds up really really big.
Oh, I love songs like that. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, it's great. And I imagine then that feeds really well into Bleed It Out, because obviously Bleed It Out starts really, that's straight away into quite a fast rhythm, you know.
So what they did for this tour, and that's also something you can see on the Road to Revolution DVD, which is from the same, well, mostly the same tour. They released it a year after. They did a sort of like mashup where Bleed It Out eventually like transferred into Faint, like with the guitar jamming. Like they did a really big like they put an end onto Bleed It Out, because Bleed It Out itself is a pretty short song. But they like give it an outro, and that outro then starts into Faint. So like the last two songs on the set list were like one gigantic party.
Yeah, imagine so. A great way to finish your set then.
Faint was actually really big. I don't know how it was in the UK, but it was a really big hit in the Netherlands as well.
No, that was a big song in the UK. And now I'm thinking about it. Yeah, that blends in with Bleed It Out. Yeah.
Yeah, they blend really well.
An amazing finish to a set.
It was a fantastic set list, to be honest. Like, I remember walking away from, like, because that was the end of the set list, and I'd been in there since before the Arctic Monkeys, so I'd been in the front section for, like, you know, something like 5 hours or whatever. So I walked out of there with my friends, and like we split up to get something to eat, get something to drink, take a pee break, you know, stuff like that. And we agreed to meet up at a certain point on the festival near Pole, you know, where we'd be meet up here in like about 20 minutes after you've done everything, you know, you want to do. And I came out of that set list. I came out of that concert, which was my first time seeing my favorite band live. And I remember just being dazed. Like I was shell shocked, dazed at how good it was.
Yeah.
And I was in line to get a drink because I was absolutely parched from singing and screaming and, you know, just the fact that I hadn't had a drink in 5 hours. And I just looked next to me, and there was like, I'll always remember this. There was a guy next to me in the line next to me. And like I felt myself being dazed, and he looked like he looks dazed as well. And I just caught his eye, and he went just like, "Hey," and I just said to him, "That was really good." And I remember him just going like he was still like his focus was still not there. He was dazed as well, and he just went, "Yeah." Like I just remember that total shock of how good it was.
They're the best kind of concerts, so you just come away and you really just don't know what's just hit you. You just kind of like, yeah. I know the feeling. So obviously the tragic events that we touched on earlier involving Chester Pennington's death.
Yeah.
I mean, the lineup of Linkin Park will never be the same again. And rumours are surfacing at the moment that the band are due to release new music. And I think Mike Shinoda has previously said that whilst Linkin Park won't carry on as the same entity it was before, there is a potential future for the band. What do you think of this going forward?
Well, I followed Mike pretty closely, even after, because it was 2017 when Chester left us, of course. He brought out the post-traumatic album, with like songs about him dealing with the loss of Chester and the loss of one of his best friends, but also like the loss of his work. Like one of the actual lyrics is like that, you know, it's of course it's gonna be hard. It's only his life's work hanging in the balance. And he was very upfront about the fact that, you know, they don't know what they want to do as a band, or they didn't at that point know what they want to do. They weren't done being Linkin Park, you know, they weren't done with it, but they were emotionally shocked enough that they didn't necessarily see a path forward yet. And one of those things that they didn't see a path forward with yet was that, you know, how do you replace Chester Bennington? Like, yeah. In what universe do you find someone who can capture what he does with his voice to an extent where it feels like you're not doing a disservice to his memory?
I think.
And that's a big question. So,
and I think that's the fine line with any of this, a band that kind of heads. Something unfortunate like this, you know, happens is not just how do you find someone to do the job, but how do you do it in a way that people don't go, hold on, you're just replacing him, and you just, you know, we're just pretending this shit didn't happen, you know, we're just, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't want to use the term, you're just putting someone to jump in his grave, like, but you know what I mean? It'd be a bit like if Nirvana came out and straight after Kurt Cobain died, they just brought someone else in and just carried on. You know, people would be there going, hold on, what the fuck are you guys doing here? Because Kurt Cobain's died. Kurt, you know, is...
Yeah, like, and lyrically, like, everything lyrically in Linkin Park, which, you know, the lyrics are fantastic. Lyrically, it was Chester and Mike sparring, and like I think the joke was that they made like a 127 versions of "Somewhere I Belong" before they got it right. And like, it's whatever they're gonna do from now on. Like, sure, they can play the old stuff, but you know how do you do justice to "Giving Up" when someone can't scream for 23 seconds? You know.
I mean, the way you could do it, in a sense, and it's just an idea. People may or may not, you know, if you listen to this, may or may not like it. Is do something in the like of what Queen did. I don't know if you've seen any of the recent.
Yeah,
Queen
Adam stuff, Lambert. Yeah.
Not Adam Lambert, but sometimes what they do is they isolate Freddie's vocals. And the band are playing, but Freddie's on the screen behind him, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and he's
yeah.
singing along to the band. You know what I mean?
Yeah, fair enough.
But do you think the Linkin Park fan base, but like the wider community would accept kind of Linkin Park moving on without Chester and kind of, I know they've got to carry on making a living, but...
Well, no, I think all five of those guys are pretty much set for life, whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
let's be honest. They've played enough shows and they've sold enough records to the point where they don't have to do anything. And Mike even says so, like he's been streaming on Twitch lately.
Yeah.
Just making music and whatever, and like teaching people how to make music and how all the Pro Tools stuff work and whatever. And he legitimately at the start of March, he went like, listen, I don't know what I'm doing. Like I was starting to pick up some semblance of my life anymore. And just, I figured I may as well do this to put some structure in my day. Like he has enough money that he doesn't need to do anything, but he wants to create and he wants to make music because that's what makes him happy. That's what he does.
So do you think it would be, an option for Linkin Park to continue under a new persona?
I don't know. I think Mike is in the words of Chester Bennington himself. Mike is actually a really good vocalist. Chester is a terrible rapper. What Chester always said was that Mike could actually sing, which, you know, if you look at like songs like "No Roads Left" and whatever, like he does a fair bit of singing and it's actually pretty good. But I don't know if they'd be able to do a tour as Linkin Park with just Mike singing. I think they need to have some sort of backup vocals from somewhere. Like, they need to have someone else along with them from, you know, they know so many bands, so they'd probably have big.
I would say that if you haven't seen it, I'd check out, you know, like I say, Sum 41's cover of Fame, where Mike came on, because
did you see the goodbye show that Yesterday did at the Hollywood whatever?
I didn't see it. I kind of tracked it.
A few months after Yesterday died, they did like a massive, like, you know, send off tribute, whatever. It was like 2 hours long or whatever, and like a lot of bands came on and just like played with them. So if you look at that show, it's on YouTube in its entirety. It's a tribute to Chester Bennington, and they actually do a lot of songs with a lot of people.
Mm. So there's potential there around them. It's just whether they want to, I guess.
Yeah, so they did things where, like, Jonathan Davis of Korn did the vocals of One Step Closer, and Travis Mark Hoppus from Blink did the vocals on What I've Done. And, you know, M Shadows of Avenged Sevenfold did the vocals on Burn It Down and Faint. In that combination of them, of those two songs that they do, and you know, so they have a lot of artists that are friends with them that they could theoretically ask for help.
Yeah,
if they ever did want to tour again, I don't necessarily think that any of those bands or those friends of them would say no if they wanted to make a tour of that kind happen.
Yeah.
But I think it's mostly the band themselves, like, coming to terms with that. Like, you know, they were a family, basically.
Oh, yeah.
They weren't just friends. They weren't just band members. They lived, like, neck and neck for 20 years. Like, they spent basically every single waking moment together, like...
Yeah, like, there's always going to be that.
One of two things will happen. Like, you'll either, like, become the best friends ever, or you're just going to start arguing. And in the case of Linkin Park, like, they're all so close to each other. That's just, you know. And losing Chester hit them hard.
There's always going to be, when you do go on tour, well, never the next go on tour and stuff like that. Sounds shocking, and we'll try and turn something a little bit more positive after I've said this, but... Mm-hmm. When you go on tour, there's always going to be that empty bunk on the tour bus, or
yeah,
that one moment in the dressing room, you know, or that one fight over the shower after a show or something like that that they're going to miss. So, trying to be a bit more positive on this, you were obviously a fan of Chester, and you managed to see a side project of his. Do you want to kind of... Something special happened on that? Do you want to tell us a little bit about
that? Yeah. So what happened was that Mike had a side project in Fort Minor, which had the hit song "Where'd You Go." Of course, I don't know if you know that, but Chester had a little side project as well called "Dead by Sunrise" with the artists of Julian K. With the friends of his, and he did like a little Dead by Sunrise had like an album, and they did a little tour that hit the Netherlands as well in 2010, and it was in Amsterdam, and I was there as well, and it was a fantastic evening because he did a lot of songs off the albums. But he also did like a Misfits cover, and like they did a little remix of One Step Closer, etc.
Yeah.
But I actually managed to while he was like going around the stage, because I was fairly close to the front, I managed to shake Chester's hand at that concert. Yeah.
That's You watched it since?
Yes. I don't want to lose it. And if I don't wash that hand ever, I fear I'll lose it. But yeah, I shook his hand. And it was just a few seconds, but you know, it still means the world to me.
Yeah, it just lasts a lifetime, that memory.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for joining me today, Roland.
Yeah, you're welcome.
It's been amazing listening to, you know, just getting to chat with you and listen to this gig, but also getting to chat about the wider Linkin Park story, the history, but then going forward, what maybe happens in the future with them.
Yeah. If you ever need, you know, another guest again, hit me up. I have a lot of concerts that I've been through that I'd be happy to talk about.
Anytime. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Hopefully we'll get back together soon and reminisce over more years of Gigmas past.
More years of Gigmas past. It's been a pleasure, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Bye.
Please leave a review wherever you listen to this. And that's how you get more people to listen to you, show your friends. And we want your stories as well, just like Roland here. So if you have a story, please contact us at pitsandgigs@gmail.com or any of our socials at pitsandgigs. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Pop us a message on there. We'll get in touch with you and we'll chat about how you can be on the podcast telling your story of your favorite gig in history. As per usual, we never say goodbye. We just say...
This podcast is part of the After Dark Podcast Network.